This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits.
Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, there we are, the Acres and Acres of Tar and Cement. I'm Kevin Healy at City Limits. Marty's in the chair today pressing buttons. He got the short straw, and we've got William in the studio as well. We're all here. Yeah, and it's our first Wednesday of the month, so we're going to be talking transport with our regular commentator, John McPherson. But we're also going to talk today to Peter Parker, who has been on the program before. Peter is an aficionado, really, about buses in town, and there's campaigns on at the moment to improve our bus services, which I think everyone who uses buses knows certainly need improving. We'll be talking to Peter about the campaigns going on there, and John will join in on that as well, and there's other things happening as well, of course. The government's talking about a very fast train, and the airport air links, as usual, up again for the 1,833rd time they're talking about it, so it's all going well. They'll be talking about it again in about 20 years' time, and it's all happening, Marty. That's all I can say. But on to other things. Oh, a cup of tea, I suppose, chaps. What do you reckon? Everyone want a cup of tea? We all in? Yeah, but it's just a straight Chinese jasmine tea today, if you're interested in what you're about to drink.
How was your trip in this morning, Kevin?
It was okay on the bike. I wore a jacket, which probably I didn't need in the temperature, but I thought it might rain.
Temperature is a bit all over the place in Melbourne at the moment.
But it was a very pleasant ride, I must admit. The way I come through from Brunswick, I ended up in Alfred Crescent and across Edinburgh Gardens, and it's quite pleasant at the time of morning. So there you are. The only problem with the ride here is that bloody Smith Street hill up to Johnson Street. Yeah, that's a killer. But apart from that,
bit of a
well.
Workout.
Oh, is it what? Is it what? But anyway, particularly at my age.
legs burning a bit.
yeah, everything's burning at that stage. But anyway, we get there. So it was a pleasant trip. You of course, did the Brekkie show earlier.
And, Sonia, yes.
And you and Sonia talked about the events of the week. And I think, you know, all we can say is, and just iterate what you were saying, that... absolutely shameful that Australia was the first country to come out and support something that's so illegal and so terrible.
It's been a pretty tough week.
Yeah. Mm. Another interesting aspect, actually, is that when Russia invaded Ukraine, and I think I recall the Australian government not taking quite the same position at that time when they didn't say, well, it's up to them to determine whether it's legal or not, I think.
Four years ago.
Yeah. when that happened, it was the eve of the Olympic Games as well. Russian participants were sent home immediately because Russia had invaded Ukraine. Now, it's been raised overnight that the American and Israeli Paralympians should be sent home immediately. And the Olympic body said, no, we're all for getting together, and you know, we're not about politics, we're about other things. So it's quite different again in that area.
Slightly different take on things.
Mm. Yeah, different, slightly different take.
Mm.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Mm. Now, headline in yesterday's Financial Review I found quite interesting, call to curb reliance on government. And this is a campaign by the Business Council of Australia. And then the Financial Review yesterday and today is holding a summit on the finances with all sorts of important people there, none of them representing the working people, of course, not one of them. But the Business Council says the government, we have to stop people relying on government, and too many people are relying on government. We've got to cut back. We need to increase.
Small government.
We need to cut taxes for business. We need... It's almost a litany, isn't it? It's almost a religious litany now. We have to improve productivity of the workers, but also have less people relying on government, so you cut out welfare all over the place, because what the hell, it's just bludging on government.
Angus Taylor attending?
Well, Angus probably will be there, yeah, and the Treasurer was there. They all go along and do it. But also yesterday, another one I found fascinating was that there was the latest report on the gender pay gap that shows that women are about 11% less. Now, this is interesting. In fact, the last week I fell upon a Labor Party handout that said all the things they're doing for workers, and one of their achievements was reducing the pay gap to 11.5%. And I thought, well, I would have thought they'd start boasting it was reduced to 0%, roughly.
Yes, I think it was down 0.9% or something,
yes,
from the previous.
It's plummeting, isn't it?
Measure.
Plummeting. And I made the point that 50 years ago we celebrated when, you know, people like Zelda Duprano was locking herself to things, and there's now a statue of her outside Trades Hall. We celebrate, I remember being at the John Curtin Hotel celebrating the fact that
it's a good old watering hole.
The courts had ruled equal pay 50 years ago. So obviously it takes a bit of catching up to get there. But anyway, what I found fascinating yesterday was that there was this article in the Fin Review about people trying to push toward equity and equal pay, and the Fin Review sort of showing that it supports women being more equal. And the very next page, there was a full-page ad for the Asia-Pacific Financial and Innovation Symposium, Palladium, at Crown Melbourne, Australia, which is coming up this month. And it listed 10 of the big investment partners in various companies and the people running big investment companies, 10 of them. And how many of the 10 do you feel might have been women?
In the senior positions?
In the senior positions.
I'll have a guess. None.
One.
Ooh, okay.
One. Yeah.
Sorry.
Sneaked in. The woman who's the head of Macquarie Bank made it.
Uh-huh.
And the rest were all men, yeah, exactly. So I thought, well, that's pretty good.
I think the banks, from what I recall from that report yesterday, were the ones sort of lagging the most in terms of the pay gap. Some of the big banks are the ones that need to do a bit more catching up.
Yeah. Yeah, they all do, but it's pretty amazing, isn't it? And of course the big gap comes also because with men in the more senior positions, they get the big bonuses and things which push it out further in those sort of jobs. Now also the Australian Resources and Energy Employer Association, a pretty progressive little group, also told the Labor government that it had to resist unions seeking better conditions for workers.
Resist?
Yeah, it's sending a country backwards. And we need to fix problems and resist union attempts to increase entitlements, they said. They said that because there was a case recently where BHP got fined for forcing workers to work on Christmas Day, and that's now against the law. And so that's what they're screaming about, and they're saying, well, you know, that
just do they give them a choice now?
Yeah, the system no longer reflects.
We'd really like you to work on Christmas Day.
Yeah, big deal. So they say the system no longer reflects how workers perform, particularly in continuous shift-based and fly-in, fly-out operations. And the most urgent reform is overturning that precedent that was set in the BHP case. And the 24/7 operations can meet the request requirements through advanced rosters or block notifications covering multiple public holidays, whatever that all meant. It's about restoring common sense and coherence to the safety net, not reducing employee protections. And the resources group wants to relax record-keeping requirements for salaried staff and remove employees completely from the rule if they are paid 1.5 times the award minimum. The system has shifted from protecting employees against underpayment to penalising employers for paperwork defects, the poor dears. That is surely not what Parliament intended. Now,
still doing paperwork.
Yeah, paperwork is awful, isn't it? in the machine thing. But then the worst thing is the bloody unions come out. I mean, they're terrible, aren't they, these bloody evil unions. The ACTU, which we know is such a, you know, radical body, it came out and said, unfortunately, this group, which represents some of our wealthiest mining companies, is arguing workers should go backwards by allowing employers to force people to work public holidays. Not only that, they would give bosses a leave pass so they no longer need to keep proper employment records. As a country, we should always be looking to improve work, not make it harder for working people.
I don't know why we bother with keeping records.
What an outrageous statement. There you are. Yes. So, that's it. I'm going to have a sip of tea.
It's a good brew, that one, actually.
God, yeah, it's just the old jasmine. Yep, it's all right, though, isn't it?
Goes well.
Yep, yep. Now, a mob called Afterpay, well, no, Afterpay, mm-hmm. they're the mob that, you know, pay. Yeah, that's right. You wouldn't know, could never get paid, but the no, Afterpay.
I've heard of it. I don't actually use it.
That's right, yeah. we're all in that boot up mode, I think. But anyway, Afterpay spent $68 million US dollars. That's more like about 80 Australian or so. Flying workers, flying 1,300 workers to California for this big doha they had to celebrate making massive profits.
Bonding.
Yes, bonding. The free-flowing alcohol and there were musicians all over the place playing. It was a terrific time. Then they came back and now they've decided to cut 40% of the staff.
I have heard a bit about this one. Yes, thank you. Yes.
40%.
It's great to have you here and
that's right, goodbye.
See you later.
Yeah, and that follows the fact that they cut by 60% in 2025. The poor old workers, anyway, they did say that the profits are going up, everything's going well. And they also nothing to see here. They also took 200 staff to a bit of a do at Lawn, and then sacked a few of those as well. So
who's actually who have they got doing the work now?
AI. That's the problem now. They've realised that AI can do what all those workers were doing. So they could take AI to California, I suppose, and
less paperwork,
booze it up, and play music for it. We can play music itself.
That's
cheaper.
You're
don't have to pay the band.
Yeah.
It all works well, doesn't it?
don't have to have anyone to help.
No. Yeah, there you are. That's all going well.
What if the bosses will show up? Or they'd be somewhere else.
I'm going to have a small. Do anyone want a small top up? We might be about to run out though. But okay.
Yeah, I'm going pretty well.
William, okay. Marty's going okay. All right, there we are.
Oh, well, hopefully they had a nice time.
Yeah, we hope so. And, of course, they're getting great redundancy payments and things, so that makes up for it when you get to the end of it and you've used your redundancy payment and you're broke. It's good. But you feel, well, they treated me well. Yeah, but I suppose they had a good time, yeah. Now, also, Domino's has announced they've been losing money, poor Domino's. And
they make fast food?
Yeah, when you see all those pizzas on the telly advertised with big strips of cheese coming off, you think, you know, this is really one of the great health products of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And
You look like you might have... You know about those, William, do you? You've had a taste.
I wouldn't dare. But they've just appointed a new bloke who comes from McDonald's. He spent his whole life at McDonald's.
Oh, yes.
Run things there. He's been a big shot there.
Yep.
And Jack Cowan, who runs, he's a very, very close mate of Gina's, by the way. He really is, Jack. He runs Domino's. And he said, I think we're very fortunate to find someone of that experience who is Australian and who wants to come back and live in Brisbane. He's got an unbelievable amount of experience. He knows the way this industry works. He knows the way franchising works. He will make a significant contribution, which I think is wonderful. I think he'll make a significant contribution, I would have thought, to the health industry and undertaker industry more than anything else.
He's going to run the show?
Yeah, old Domino's, yeah.
Yeah, right. I heard something else about him, I think, during the week. Can't remember.
Oh, right.
Something.
That's that.
I'll probably be going out on a limb if I...
And a few weeks ago, we announced or we made the point that while they tell us that renewable energy is much more costly and therefore we have to keep using fossils because at the moment, you know, the bills have kept lower, We made the point that for the first time in Australia in the December quarter, renewables provided more than half the electricity in this country for the first time ever. And surprise, surprise, the bill, the cost of electricity was 44% lower than the December quarter a year earlier, and 43% lower than the previous September quarter. And I couldn't quite work that one out, given we have to accept the fossils argument that it's much more expensive. I can't work it out.
They're pretty significant numbers.
They are. They are. Now, that's the wholesale price. And I did make the point on the week that was the satire piece I do, that don't actually lose a lot of sleep expecting to see that reflected in your electricity bill, that I suspect the fact that they're paying less for it in the at the retail level, at the wholesale level, won't reflect on us, the customer.
Not just yet, anyway. So,
No.
So I've got to wait a bit longer.
No, well, our reliable source of information, the Herald Sun, confirmed that this week. Yes, the headline, lower energy bills, not certainty. Well, I think that's an understatement.
Right.
absolute
okay.
understatement. Yeah. Yes, falling wholesale electricity prices will not automatically translate into lower household bills. Origin Energy boss Frank Calabria has warned, saying surging transmission and distribution costs tied to the energy transition could overwhelm recent market relief. So what bad luck.
I'm not overly surprised to hear that.
No. I'm not overly surprised that you're not overly surprised. Yes, what do you know? Isn't that a strange...
One day up ahead in the future, hopefully.
Yes. Now, one of the most awful things about... everything's awful about the invasion of Iran. But there's a mob in America called Polly Market, which bets on everything.
Oh, yes.
And it bets on events around the world. And a lot of people made a lot of money, apparently up to 1.4 million... betting on when the US and Israel would attack. I mean, how immoral to bet on that.
Someone was running a market?
Yeah, and there's suggestions, incidentally, because there was also a market on when America would invade Venezuela and seize Maduro, and some people made a fortune out of that as well. And there's some suggestion there could be insider trading going on as well, that some people have inside information on when it's going to happen and bet on it. Now, that I can't believe that in the capitalist world. But but the immorality of a company that actually takes bets on when wars are going to start and who's going to get killed, I think, is absolutely and unbelievably immoral.
That's truly shocking.
Yeah,
that is truly shocking.
Yep.
That they're actually allowed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one that's sort of vaguely, another just an interesting item. There was an article in the Herald Sun a few weeks ago with Luka Gregorovich, the former secretary of the bus, tram and train union.
Oh, yes.
He was a good industrial unionist, actually. But her husband is a big capitalist. He runs investment companies. But the article was about them having twins, and they had it through IVF. And it was, and good luck to them. I mean, having the kids and all that sort of stuff. But the article talked about this wonderful IVF company that helped them get the twins, and what a wonderful job it did, and what a great company it is, etc., etc. The one thing that the Herald Sun didn't mention was that Ben Gray, her husband, owns that company.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, I would have thought in a story praising this IVF company, they might have maybe just mentioned that he owned it.
Made a reference to it, or maybe made a little note at the
end? Yeah, you would have thought it might have been relevant. But anyway, they didn't, and there you are. But that's that. Yeah.
We have.
Let's take a break, and we'll get Peter Parker and John McPherson on the line and talk a bit of sense. We do have on the line Peter Parker, who's a great activist for bus transport in the city, and John McPherson, our regular commentator on transport issues. And Peter, we'll start with you because you've currently got a campaign going for better bus services, particularly around the Brunswick area, but there's also a campaign currently being conducted by Friends of the Earth about buses in the western suburbs of Melbourne as well.
Yes, right. Good morning, Kevin, and also John. Yes, there's a huge impetus for bus reform and community action. across Melbourne. We've got, you mentioned before, the Sustainable Cities Friends of the Earth campaign, really want to improve buses out in Werribee, Brimbank, Melton, many of the western suburbs, and also campaigns in Dandenong, the fixed-standy buses, and in Melbourne's inner north, there are campaigns for various bus routes to get Sunday service or more frequency 7 days a week. So it's fantastic that there's so much community interest in getting bus services up to scratch since they've been neglected for so long.
Yeah, now John McPherson's also on the line. John, you've for a long, long time on this program argued that buses can play a key role in upgrading the standard of Melbourne transport.
Well, yeah, well, it's, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
In many ways, buses are all you have, you know, in the middle and outer suburbs. You absolutely need the buses to fill in all the gaps where the trams and the trains don't run. And you need buses to finish off networks so that every neighbourhood has decent public transport. And in Melbourne, everything is so based on historical accidents about what runs when and where and never gets reassessed properly. There are no basic standards about what you can expect to what kind of service you can expect to get in your neighbourhood. Oh, dear. So, yeah, there's an awful lot to fix.
Yeah, Peter, a couple of the campaigns you're specifically involved in, let's look at each of them. The 506 bus, what's the situation there?
Yeah, 506 bus is a bus route that goes from Moonee Ponds to West Garth, so it goes through the middle of Brunswick, Dawson Street, Glenlyon, and that finishes very early on Saturdays and doesn't run at all on Sundays. It's actually Melbourne's second busiest bus route it's now Melbourne's busiest bus route that doesn't run 7 days. It was the second busiest that didn't run 7 days, but the busiest was actually the bus route 800 in Dandenong, which I was also involved with, but we got that running 7 days. So now 50, and that's been very successful with the number of the usage. So the 506 is now Melbourne's busiest bus that doesn't run Sundays, even though housing's got more densely and the government wants to have more housing density. People's travel patterns have changed so that people are travelling much more on Sundays than they did. But the timetable hasn't changed for like 40 years. Even though you go back to the precursors of the 506 in the 1950s, and it actually did run 7 days. So we've got a case of these buses sitting idle at bus depots at times that people need to travel. So it just needs to hire more drivers, a bit for maintenance, and we can get more buses on the road to get people to where they need to be.
And when it does run, what's the frequency?
It's about every 20 or I think it's about every 20 minutes on weekdays. It's less on Saturdays, but its timetable is, I think, a little bit lumpy. It's not quite consistent throughout the day. But the main concern with that particular, with the 506, is its operating hours are very short. So nothing on Sunday evenings. It can be still daylight at this time of year, and the last bus has gone long ago. And, of course, no service at all on Sunday.
That's just ridiculous, isn't it, when you think about it? But
say I rest my case. based on, you know, the things haven't changed for 40 years and it's gone backwards.
It's a classic case of metro. We're going the other way. The other one is the 508, Peter. Tell us about that one as well.
Certainly. 508 is a longer route, Moonee Ponds to Alphington. It intersects with 9 tram routes, 3 train lines, and 1 major bus route. So if you look at the number of connections, because in areas like Brunswick, Northcote, Moonee Ponds, you can go north-south on public transport, but east-west the services are very limited. Now, the 508 bus does run 7 days, but it's only every 40 minutes on Sundays and only every 30 minutes on Saturdays, even though in peak times it runs every 15 minutes. In fact, in the 1950s, that ran every 15 minutes, 7 days a week. So, again, we've gone backwards in terms of the the service frequencies on that, even though housing is getting denser, there's more people moving into areas like Brunswick, Northcote, and it would, having it run every 10 minutes would essentially complete the grid. So you've got trains and trams running north-south. The missing ingredient is a frequent 508 bus running between major centres like Moonee Ponds, Brunswick, Northcote, Alphington, and that's currently got 40-minute gaps, which is unacceptable, and there's really no excuse given. Again, you've got all these idle buses in depots that do nothing or very little on Saturdays and Sundays.
And the those long waits. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I had a situation recently. I wanted to get the bus that goes from Moonee Ponds to Clifton Hill Station, that one up Brunswick Road.
Yep.
And it was a public holiday, and I went and checked the timetable. I think in one of the hours I wanted to catch it, there was only one bus.
Yeah, now the 5.0, that would be the 5.04. Again, I think it's about every, 30 or 40 minutes on weekends.
It's 30 minutes during the day, I know that, yeah.
Again, it's a very limited service. Like, it's extraordinary that you've got cases like Brunswick, where you've got the Route 19 tram and the others that are pretty frequent, but you need the east-west connections as well, and it's pretty much potluck with buses only every 30 or 40 minutes if they run at all on Sundays, which quite a few bus routes, as we mentioned before, in Brunswick don't. Another one is the 503 a bit further north in Albion Street. You've got Housing Harvest Square Housing Development in Brunswick West. That has no public transport at all on Sundays, even though it's housing that the government is spruiking, and there's quite a bit of social housing around there. But again, the bus timetable hasn't changed for decades on the 503. And you've also got non-coordination between what one arm of government wants to do, like in reducing the number of train stations in Brunswick from 3 down to 2. Mm. However, if you look at where the buses that would serve the newly located stations are, one of them is the 506. So you'd be having the nearest bus to one of the new stations not running 7 days a week. So one hand doesn't know what the other is doing.
That's unusual. On that very point, I don't know if either of you can answer this question, but given that clearly we've gone backwards rather than forwards and they're much worse services than they used to be, what's led to that?
I think it's most of the service cuts happened, they were sort of gradual from about the 1960s, 1970s, and then there is a lot of stagnation from about in the 1980s, 1990s. There were some areas that did get improvements under the BRACS government that did invest quite a bit in bus services from about 2006. So they promised that around 300 bus routes would get Sunday service in 2006, and around 200 actually did. So and generally speaking, when the Sunday service was added, it was generally only every 40 to 60 minutes. So, and there are a lot of bus routes like the 503, 506 that didn't get any improvements at all from that particular plan. So it's very much an incomplete plan. There is a bus plan that were promised improved reform buses in 2021, when the Melbourne Victoria's bus plan came out. They went to public consultation before the 2022 state election, and then they decided that Melbourne's north would be one of the pilot areas, and we thought, oh, well, that's good. Maybe we're finally getting better buses. And there wasn't very much information about that. And then just recently, towards the end of last year, Legislative Council got some of these internal documents tabled, and it was found out that Cabinet basically rejected this bus reform plan in late 2023. And some of the internal documents, which you can read, are quite fascinating. They call for buses every 10 minutes on main roads, something like what we're advocating for the 508 and other bus routes. Yet it just didn't get any funding in the 2024 state budget because of its rejection by Cabinet. The only thing that did get funding for buses in that budget was the 800 bus that was upgraded to run 7 days, and that has been hugely successful. So the government knows that these things are successful. It just needs to find the wherewithal to reform buses and put in extra frequent services.
So which is the 800 bus?
The 800 bus is A bus route that runs from Chadston to Dandenong via Princes Highway. So it's a main road linking main shopping centres, a lot of employment areas. And again, that bus ran some 7 days a week until the early 1990s, in which the service was cut. So again, its timetable hadn't changed for 30 years. We did get funding. I led a campaign, Fix 800 Bus campaign. It was hugely. It took about two years to get the funding for that, to get the government to listen, but they did, and we've now got very successful usage. The Saturday usage was up 200%, and the Sunday service, which didn't previously exist but now exists, that is much better used than, you know, most other buses. So it's a very strong patronage performer, and it shows that when you upgrade popular bus routes, people will actually vote with their feet and use the better service. So that was also helping connect people to a major shopping centre and also quite a low income catchment. Yeah. So we think that routes like the 506 would be very similar to the 800 in that when you improve service, particularly adding up on Sundays, people will use it in big numbers.
Mm. John, yeah. Comment? Yeah, John?
Yeah, well, that's entirely as you'd expect. You know, when the service is pathetic, the only people who will use the services are people who have absolutely no alternative. But once you start improving the service, you get more and more what they idea call induced demand, where there are plenty of people who will start to think, okay, that service is bearable, I'll use it. And that goes on, the user pattern gets more and more worthwhile as you get more and more people who think, yes, this is a worthwhile service.
But that's right. Like, one of the things that we say is you add service, but you multiply connections. And for a route like the 508, where you're connecting with 9 trams, 3 trains, and the number of connection possibilities, if you improve the service from every 30 to 40 minutes on weekends to every 10 minutes, it multiplies.
I was interested in that service, Peter, from Chadston to Dandenong. Some people in the department would probably argue that, of course, you don't need a service along Dandenong Road because you've got the train line. But because that's ridiculous, you do need both.
But
you can see the argument all over Melbourne where they've said, oh, no, we don't need a service along the main road that goes anywhere near a rail line because people can use the rail line. But, of course, it's different markets and you know, it's completely... Oh, do you need both?
That's right. Like, in the case of the Route 800 bus, a lot of it was 1 to 1.5 kilometres from the train line. It served destinations like Chadston Shopping Centre and M-City. Yeah. And even went near Monash Uni in Clayton, that were nowhere near the train line. No. So the 800 has been a hugely successful upgrade.
And I think looking at Nepean Highway, it's the same sort of issues there. You know, there's not a bus service that runs, you know, all the way down Nepean Highway, as far as I can see.
So parts of Nepean Highway, there's the 823 bus, which is one bus an hour, doesn't run on weekends at all. And that finishes at Brighton East. It should probably terminate at Southland and fill in the portion from Elston.
The whole thing. My view is that you need to have principles on how you design the network, and that you apply those principles.
And the thing is that they actually already exist, and the government's done all the work, or the department did all the work. But it was rejected.
Well, they obviously regard buses as being completely political. It's chosen, you know, completely on a political basis, not on a need basis.
I think there is hope. Like, the government can't be continuing to build these big projects. People are asking for getting returns from these projects, like with the Metro Tunnel. The business case for it was predicated on boosting the frequencies of train lines like Craigieburn and Upfield to 10 minutes. That didn't happen. So there's a lot of network effects, benefits of improving the buses. A lot of it doesn't require capital expenditure. It just requires using the assets we've already got. And that's something the government have been weak in the past, but hopefully in an election year and when they've run out of money for other things, they'll take a bit more interest.
Well, that's a point. Buses are, compared with trams or trains, cheap. So, yes, that's a very good point.
Well, buses also.
I think we need frequent service on all modes, though.
Of course. I mean, this is another thing. Buses are so regarded as being so, so the poor relation. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
But buses can also have play a key role in linking people into the other forms of transport. Can't they?
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's the other role. Feeder services to the train lines and the tram lines. Yeah.
But that means they're going to be frequent, of course.
Yes. And frequency seems to be the hardest thing of all for the Melbourne decision makers to tolerate. Yeah, They still have the view that we should be trying to make every bus run with 40 passengers on board. Excuse me, and that's not going to happen. And it doesn't happen anywhere.
Interestingly, routes, if we do look at patronage productivity, routes like the 508 and 506 do very well compared with the rest of Melbourne.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, this is another thing. There are standout routes that do so much better than the norm. And why can't the other routes be improved so they do a good job too? Sorry, I've got a cough. Excuse me.
Right.
Okay. Here I am.
Right there, John. Yeah. Well, of course. Also, I noticed recently there's been a move by Kinetic, which is one of the big bus companies.
Yep.
They're saying they want to go as electric as possible, and they're getting more and more electric vehicles. Do you know what's happening there, Peter?
Yes, it's a government does have a plan. This is one part of the bus plan that does seem to be proceeding, and that's a move towards electric buses. And there are certainly some advantages, like, they're quieter, lower emissions. But the important thing is that if you don't have a service, or if it's only one bus an hour, then the big benefits of electric buses are when you get the occupancy in. When you get the people using it, that's where you get the big mode shift from private cars. So having an electric bus carrying a few people on an infrequent service does not maximise the benefits. We've got the case of an electric bus depot in Ivanhoe, I think, and that's got all electric buses, and the government says how wonderful it is. But you look at the bus routes that run from it, and only one of them runs 7 days a week. The others have very limited hours, and they're indirect routes, and they're unlikely to be very useful. And while the other one that does run 7 days duplicates and overlaps a lot of other routes. So until you've got the frequency and the network planning right, you're not going to be getting the benefits from the bus electrification that people hope.
And, of course, electric buses are a lot more expensive to buy or lease or whatever, and so you want to get maximum value out of them by having them running long hours on 7 days a week.
That's right, yeah, especially if they're cheaper to run.
Cheaper to run, and, of course, they're superior products, so the passengers love them. And even the people, in the street notice that the buses are quieter and don't pump out fumes.
Yeah, but the bus has got to come frequently to get the biggest benefit.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, they should all be low floor as well, so that people with disabilities can have access to them. But that's also not the case. I mean, some turn up and then you can, some you can't. It's pretty potpourri sort of stuff.
I think they're meant to be 100% low floor. There might be cases, especially with rail substitute buses, where not all of them are yet. Think about access to bus stops. Like, there are a lot of bus stops, especially on main roads, that people just can't, whether you're able-bodied or not, people just can't cross the road because of traffic volumes. So it's essential that bus stops are accessible regardless of traffic.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. The bus stops themselves are often miserably, almost nothing there except a pole with no information on it.
Yeah, which is useful when it's pouring rain. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, somewhere like Canberra, they've had beautiful enclosed bus stops everywhere for, you know, 40 years.
But of course, the bus contracts are the government pays them to run the services. So one would have thought that the government has some power to be able to make conditions that mean we do get a much better bus service. So
they have absolute power. Like, every bus frequency upgrade requires a government decision. The government approves all the timetables. So the ball is in the government's court to plan and resource an efficient, direct and frequent bus network.
Yes, that's right. So all the miserableness can be sheeted home to the government, I'm afraid, because they do tell the bus companies pretty much what to do. But on the other hand, the bus companies quite often are pretty resistant to improving the services on their routes because they like things the way they are too.
I think that's changing, though. Like, there has been a consolidation of the bus industry, so the government's tended to, you know, force a lot of the smaller bus companies out. And
yep.
I think the bus company will run a better service if the government is willing to fund it. And we've got, you know, cases where they have upgraded bus services in some areas but not others.
Yep.
And there's been various promises made, and not all of them have been kept. But it's something that we can apply a lot of political pressure to, and as we found with certain other bus campaigns like the Dandong bus campaign, applying pressure does work and we can get change.
Yep, well, it's great to hear an optimistic message, Peter.
Oh, absolutely, and for your listeners, there are various Facebook pages that people can look at. I can mention some of those if you like.
That was my next question, just about what can people now do, Peter? Yeah.
Okay, well, first thing is to tell your local politician that we need better buses, and also to, as well, send an email to the Minister, Gabrielle Williams, saying that we need better buses running 7 days. There are Facebook pages. There are Facebook pages as well. I could mention 508 More Buses, 7 day 506 bus, and there's also one for Albion Street, Sunday service on the 503 bus. So there's various Facebook pages that people can get more information on campaigns. In the West, there's the Better Buses campaign as well. They're also very active on social media. And in the Dandong area in the southeast, there's Fix Standy Buses also on Facebook. So we'd encourage people to look up various local bus campaigns, and if there isn't a campaign, maybe start one for a bus route that is important to you.
Well, and you've also got a number for Gabrielle Williams' office for people who want to ring it. I presume that's her number, that 965842100 number. Is that her office? I presume it is.
That sounds right, yes.
Yeah, well, give that out again, because people probably now need to get a pen and write it down. If you want to ring that office, it's 965842100. That's Gabrielle Williams, the Transport Minister.
And I've also got an email address for the Minister, which goes straight to her, and that is receptionminwilliams@transport.vic.gov.au.
Right. Could you repeat that again? Just
reception, Min Williams, all that is one word, at transport.vic.gov.au.
Okay, Peter. Look, thanks for all that, and we'll hope things start to improve.
A pleasure. Thanks, Kevin, and thank you, John.
Okay.
Nice to talk, Peter.
Thanks, Peter. John, I want to, that was because Peter Parker, who I think you can tell from that conversation, is a particularly strong advocate for buses.
Yep.
We'll take a very quick break, John, and come back to you
in about that'd be good.
We've just got to clear the line, and you can clear your throat.
Clear the throat, yep. Thanks.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenantsvictoria.org.au.
Tenants Victoria,
tenants.vic.org.au, anikalegal@www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Okay, back on the line, John McPherson. John, there was an article in the Age a few weeks ago all we would say about privatisation, primarily a couple of things I wouldn't agree with, but it makes the point that when governments privatise public functions, the people who buy it, their whole involvement is to get a return on investment. So surprise, surprise, we all know prices go up madly. Now this led to a letter in The Age, and this all comes from a listener, and thanks to the listener for sending me all this information. Someone sent a letter in saying that it's no surprise that this cost will increase, etc. Just another example. Can anyone from government identify a single example of the privatisation of a government service that has resulted in better and cheaper service as always promised, or even a break-even example? Oh, wait, but if they can't name an example, can they then admit defeat and say no more? This led to a letter from someone saying, yes, of course, Jeff Kennett's privatisation of public transport worked really well, and that was a really good one, which led to further letters saying, what crap. the correspondent's too young to remember public transport in the 50s when all suburban stations were staffed and smartly uniformed and staff took your ticket at the gate. Carriages were clean and well-maintained. It's sad also that the decline in public services and the eruption of strikes was a political problem that was not properly addressed. And another letter, privatising public transport a clear winner? I think not. All the regional communities who lost their train line may beg to differ. So, John, comment on all that.
Yes. Well, of course, when public transport was privatised, the rail system in Melbourne, for instance, the suburban rail system was split in two with two operators. And, of course, that meant that they were allowed to operate to different standards on their, and they bought different rolling stock. And so when, after a few years, it was realised how stupid it was to have two operators, and one of the operators took their bat and ball and went home to England, the whole thing had to be re-amalgamated, even if it kept a private operator. And, of course, they then discovered that the rolling stock wasn't compatible. So, you know, that's just one example of the mad things that happened. Ownership, it seems to me, has got not a lot to do with it. It's the conviction of the operators that they want to run a good system, and it doesn't really matter who owns it or anything like that. And so the pressure wasn't on the operators, private or otherwise, certainly under a Kennett government, to run a good system. It was expected to look pretty, with the carriages nicely painted and that sort of thing. But that was about it.
Yeah, and of course, as one letter pointed out, they got rid of heaps of staff. You used to have on stations. You had a station master. You had a guard on every train. You had conductors on trams.
Correct. Well, that was the other big thing. All the staff went. Yeah. And we've sort of got used to it. We tend to forget that there was a lot more staff around. And then, of course, issues with disruptive passengers and things like that are much more likely to happen if there isn't staff around to intervene.
And also, of course, far more ticket dodging, etc. Dodging fare evasion, because there used to be someone on every train or platform to sell you a ticket or check, and the conductor would make sure everyone had a ticket on a tram. Now it's you just keep your eye out for inspectors.
Yep. And on the buses, well, the bus drivers, I believe this is true, have been told not to intervene if they see somebody riding without a ticket, without, you know, tagging on.
Mm.
So, you know, on the buses, you don't have to worry about it either, even though there's a driver quite close to the door you get on, you know. Yeah. Yeah, it's only a person who drives a car all the time who'd really say that public transport improved, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's interesting from what, you know, talking to Peter, you know, that those bus services, in fact, have gone backwards over the
yeah.
journey rather than seeing improvements. I mean, we're now crying out for improvements, but we're not getting them.
Yeah, well, you can guarantee that the population density along those routes would be a lot higher now than it was, you know, 50 years ago, with a lot more people who, you know, should be interested in a decent quality public transport service, but no, it hasn't happened. You know, there was a belief in the 60s and 70s and possibly into the 80s that everybody was going to drive a car and public transport was, you know, going to become almost unnecessary. We were going to really follow the Los Angeles model of the city, where we tried very hard with building lots of freeways, but we discovered over time that, no, that didn't work because of the... you still got major congestion problems. It didn't matter how much road you built. And, of course, even Los Angeles discovered that, and they've been busily trying to re-establish their suburban train and light rail systems that they junked, you know, 70 or 80 years ago. And so we've really been in the same mess. So gradually the views have changed a bit within the bureaucracy and the government that you do need decent public transport. But what the government and the bureaucrats seem to think is decent public transport, you know, is not at a level that makes public transport an easy-to-use option for most people. And basically that's just a basic 10-minute service. So you don't have to wait more than 10 minutes if you see the bus disappearing down the road. You know, the wait till the next one arrives isn't interminable. It's, you know, it's bearable. You can play with your phone in the meantime and another bus will turn up.
Yeah, that's wishful thinking in many ways, John, I would think, but never mind.
I think at that level, if you can get the basic service level up to 10 minutes,
if you can
have a product you can sell, you know.
No, 10 minutes is excellent. I mean, I sometimes go down the Frankston line and it's a 10-minute service and, you know, just to turn up, you're not going to wait too long. It's
Well, you had a similar experience in Geelong the other day,
I did, indeed. I just missed a train. I got off the bus from Lawn and got on the train. I went to the toilet.
You got caught short.
And I thought, well, the train, I've got, usually there's about a 10-minute gap between the bus getting in, but the train took off, and I thought, oh, I'm stuck here. But then I realised another train in about, I think, 20 minutes or something.
I had a good experience in Geelong
with the train. Yeah, well, over those sort of distances, you know, a train every 20 minutes from as far away
Marty's
as Geelong
just saying Marty's just saying he had a good experience as well. Yeah.
This week, yeah, down in Geelong. Yep.
Yeah, no, good. Yeah. Well, that's when the distances are longer like that, you know, a train every 20 minutes is really fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's happened because the Geelong line trains have to also perform the suburban train duty when they get closer to Melbourne, servicing Tarneed and Windenvale.
Despite the fact that really it should still go the direct route through Werribee and keep going.
Yeah, I mean, it should.
Faster. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And the others should have a suburban rail link of their own.
Uh-huh. Yes, and, you know, that's another example of, you know, very, very, you know, crappy planning. Nothing joins up or gets done in a rational way. It's just... It's just done, you know. This is why I say that politics makes the decisions, not rationality or you know, trying to get the most out of your, you know, the bus fleet or the train fleet or anything like that. Yeah. It's just,
we've got to wind up now, John. Time's up. Okay. But that's a good note to finish on, because for a minute there I thought we were going to finish on a positive note.
Oh,
which
no.
Would be
they like to play.
That's okay. Good.
It's playing politics. They play politics rather than deciding things are going to be done well.
Okay, John, but look, thanks for your time, and I hope you get over that cold, by the way. And
thank you. I'm sorry about my sniffles.
That's okay.
We'll talk next month. Okay, thanks, John.
Okay. Cheers, Marty. Bye.
Cheers, John. Bye-bye.
John McPherson there, who's our regular commentator, and that's it. Next week it's energy. And
sorry, my fault.
Don't worry. Energy next week, and Joe now. I think Joe's back in town, I think, isn't he?
Joe's B-I-T, back in town.
Yeah, right. That's it. City Limits. Thanks, Marty.